Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Blitz is defined as a sudden, savage attack. It is indeed all this. The effect is sure. The premise is simple. It's a basic, primal confrontation. Man to man. No excuses are offered. None accepted.
Welcome to the latest edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com.
Looks like a radio station.
Now, here are your hosts. Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers.
Pure athlete, yeah.
A transcend race, hombre.
Matt Butler.
I don't talk man. I back it up.
And we are sock full of that, man.
Damn right.
And Jeff Howe.
It's still real to me, damn it.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
If you're going to blitz, come strong, but don't come at all.
Coming strong with a post-spring game, Longhorn Blitz with Horns 24-7. I am Jeff Howe. Let's not waste any time and get right into it. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, we thank you so much for being a part of this week's presentation and enjoying another episode of The Blitz. You can get this podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search Horns 24-7. That's Horns 247. No dashes, no slashes or spaces. Click that follow button. Get every episode of The Blitz when it drops on Tuesdays. And if you'd be so kind, please leave us a five-star review if you enjoy what we're doing here. Helps out greatly with the higher-ups, if you will. Let me bring in the rest of the team. He is the master of the soundboard, the drive machine extraordinaire, our lead research analyst on Longhorn Blitz, and a daily fantasy guru. He is Matt Butler. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well, man. How about you?
Not too shabby. Can't complain about anything. And a man who very rarely does he complain about anything because he's just happy with life, knows a lot about life. He's a renaissance man. Wears many hats for the Austin Radio Network, including co-hosting Ball Don't Lie, each and every weekday with Mike Harge from 3 to 7 or 6 if they're preempted by Texas baseball or whatever. But nevertheless, but for the purposes of this podcast, he is our lockdown corner here on Longhorn Blitz. Lifetime Longhorn, 2002 UT All-American, 2002 semifinalist for the Jim Thorpe Award. Fourth-round draft choice of the New York Giants back in 2003. Spent his NFL career with the Giants, Lions, Bears, Bucks, Broncos, and a year with the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the CFL. When he was done with football, he got himself back to Austin, Texas in the 40 Acres, where he earned his degree. Whenever that T-ring comes back in, we will make sure he wears it proudly. Nevertheless, he is a card-carrying member of DBU, and when you get that All-American honor recognized by the NCAA, they make sure you get one of those black cards. Number 21 in your program, number one in your hearts. Mr. Rod Babers.
Thanks for the intro, bro. Gets better every time.
Rod, I forgot to ask you, did you take part in any of the Letterman's weekend roundup stuff?
No, I didn't do any of that stuff. I should start doing more of that, but no, I got all the emails, and I probably should just, I went to, like, they have, like, a luncheon, and they do, like.
You're a busy man, I know.
Yeah, no, I probably should try to do more of that stuff.
You're one of the old heads now, Rod.
I am. That's why I don't like going. I feel old. I do. I don't like going. I feel old when I go. So, like, well, so I don't go to those high school reunions either.
What Jerry Gray and Johnny Johnson were to you, that's what you are to the kids now.
I know. I do not like to be reminded.
Well, you're mine. Oh, Rod Babers. Yeah, I've seen his picture on the wall and down in the weight room.
Get a lot of those. Get old people like, I watched you play.
You were All-American the year I was born.
Yeah, exactly. Get some of those. Be like, oh, yeah, I went to school, man, when you were playing. I'm like, do not like hearing that very often. Yeah, it's okay, though. It's a blessing.
I'm coming up on the 20-year anniversary of you being drafted.
So. That is right, brother. Damn.
20 years ago.
Once again, another reminder how old we are.
Wow. I just like re-racking this. You still remember where you were when you got the call? When you
Yeah, I was at the house. I was at, well, my old house in H-Town. I was at the house. Yeah. I didn't want to have some party or something like that because I didn't want to deal with disappointment in front of people, that kind of stuff. So it's a private affair.
Nice.
Yeah, with the fam. It's good.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right, we'll talk NFL draft next week because the draft is next week.
Oh, shizzle.
We'll talk plenty of draft next week, but let's talk spring game. don't know where you guys want to start. Well, let me start with this kind of big picture. We'll talk quarterbacks. Trust me, we'll get to some position by position stuff. But Rod, I know one of your big themes has been the identity of the offense. What's it going to be in 2023? Anything in the spring game that led you down one path or another in that regard?
I think that was tons. I mean, obviously, he's not – I mean, Sark's not showing. He's not trying to reveal too much, and I get that. But I do think if you're just paying close attention – and honestly, I think fans who are not necessarily football theorists can also jump to the same conclusion here. The strengths of Texas offense are in the passing game, period.
Mm-hmm.
All right? We saw the wide receivers. That looks like the deepest group on the team, potentially, with X-Men, Jay Witt, now A.D. Mitchell. I think they combined for, what, I don't know, like 200 yards receiving, 15 receptions or something like that. And then a young Jonte Cook. When I've been talking about a guy like Isaiah Nayor, and you add J.T. Sanders to that, he's not a wide receiver, but to the receiving passing game,
right,
he's another threat you can use. There's no question when you're building an offensive identity, you're building it around your strengths, and the strength of this group is the weapons, the weaponry you have in the passing game. Now, can Quinn Ewers play consistently enough to be able to maximize those weapons? I do believe so. I think the footwork's going to improve. I think his process is going to improve tremendously. I'm not saying he's going to be, you know, number one overall pick or anything like that, but it'll improve enough for him to be able to maximize the matchup advantages that those weapons are going to bring you. Because truth is, teams, unless you play maybe it's Oklahoma, or maybe it's in the Big 12 title game, or maybe it's in the college football playoff if you're lucky enough to get there, you're not going to face many teams that have enough defenders to match up with what you can present across the board.
Matt, you on the same page with Rod, or you feeling something else?
No, I'm right there with him. Like, just seeing the flash. I think with the spring game, you know, you want to see those flash plays because you know you aren't going to just see everything that they're going to show during the fall. But if the players sort of stand out to you, like you mentioned, you had – flash plays from the guys that you were wondering about, Cook, or more, you go see A.D. Mitchell, what he's able to do. And then, I mean, of course, you know what you get out of Witt. But just having the passing game be something that you see the flashes that you want, you see the guys look explosive, and you see the depth that you had hoped to see. So I don't think you could have really asked for more on that end.
I was trying to think about this. You know, when's the last time Texas was this loaded at the perimeter skill positions? And I'll throw tight end in there, too. I was thinking about it real hard. It might be 2007, and I know you weren't at peak. Jordan Shipley wasn't peak Jordan Shipley yet, and Quan Cosby wasn't quite peak Quan Cosby yet. But you and Lima Swede was hurt most of the year. But if you just look at it just in totality, right, like you just look at names on paper, you got Lima Swede, Jordan Shipley, Quan Cosby, Jermichael Finley. Like, that's probably the last time we saw a Texas group of skill guys, tight end included, on the perimeter – that you look at it and say, man, that's a really good group. Like, we could look back on this group and say the same things that you could say about that group. And even more so because, like I said, Lima Swede was hurt most of the year. Jermichael Finley pretty much was non-existent after that Oklahoma game. But just the names on paper, it's that impressive.
We're back to Rod's era because, like, those outside guys flash. Like,
yeah,
that was the big three.
No, and I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because I was texting with Quan Cosby recently, and I heard him on B&E this morning. Since we're talking about what the offensive identity could be, let's just say it's going to be built around a strength, which is the passing game, right? So Quan was even saying this on B&E, and it makes perfect sense because I've talked about it before, too. You have to insulate your pass protection, right? You can't just assume if your passing game is going to be identity, you can't just assume, oh, every matchup our offensive line is going to win. No, they're not going to win. They're not going to win all the time, and you may have to adjust. But still, you can't just, you know, disregard your offensive identity. An adjustment means you should still be versatile enough, yes, for the passing game to lead the way, but then it should be malleable in how you use fast game. Not always the deep ball, not always the intermediate passing game. So he started talking about how their wide receiver screen was like their extension of their running game, which we talked about before. He said something to the effect that they were averaging damn near like 11 yards, like in 2008, averaging like 11 yards per screen pass or something like that. Crazy. We got to get Quan. I got to text him and get the actual stats. Or you can just listen to B&E, actually, and go podcast because he was on there this morning, so Tuesday morning, I should say. And he started talking about how they basically that was the extension of the running game because they didn't really have a dominant running game. But also, as we know, going back for our time, you know, prepping for the Texas LSU game and going back to our Joe Brady obsession, the insulation, their pass protection is just a quick game. Quick game, quick game, quick game, quick game, quick game, quick game. Getting the ball out really, really quickly and then letting those really dynamic playmakers on the perimeter, just letting them make plays with the ball in space. Guys like Jay Witt, guys like JT Sanders, guys like, hell, X-Man, whatever it is. And that team didn't really have a dominant running game. It had a running game just to kind of keep it balanced.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a dominant running game.
No, Chris Obunaya got the job. I mean, I'm talking about an NFL running back.
And he was the last Texas player to be in what I call my 30-40 club, have at least 30 rushes and 40 receptions in the season. Before that, it was Eric Metcalf. He's still the last one to do it in 2008. So even Chris Obunaya was a versatile weapon.
He had 46 that year.
Yeah, exactly right. He used him more of a hybrid
school
guy.
Record, right, Matt?
I believe so, for a running back.
I think so.
Yeah, so they, kind of getting back to your point, though, we're going to actually, your point, though, about this, Jeff, if we're going to make the, or if we're going to envision that the offensive identity of Texas is going to be the passing game, there's a lot they can learn from that 2018 because Greg Davis knew we don't have a dominant rusher. I mean, I'm not saying C.J. Baxter or Jonathan Brooks won't be a dominant rusher, but they're not going to be Bijan and Rojo. The running game is going to regress. I think it's pretty obvious that it's going to take a – I don't know if it's going to take a huge step back, but it's going to take a step back.
Yeah.
But your passing game looks like it's going to take a huge step forward potentially. That's going to be your identity. Insulate the pass protection with the quick game. Just understand that you might have to go into some games, maybe throwing 60% the time, but I don't know, 15 to 20% of those throws will be within the line of scrimmage. They're just an extension of the running game.
Yeah.
So that's what I love about the, and they had a good tight end.
Yeah.
They had a good tight end play back then, you know what I mean, in 2007 when you're talking about. So there are ways to utilize. So I love that aspect of what Quan brought up is, and you brought up the 082 thing too. So I love the fact that let the quick game being extension of the run game. If the run game's not working, just like you did in a TCU game, when it wasn't working, what they do? Well, they just took the run game to the perimeter with those Jay Witt screens on the outside, and it worked. If they are stuffing the box, all right, and they are going to clog up all the running lanes by the line of scrimmage, that's great. That means they won the numbers battle. Good for you. That means they're losing the numbers battle somewhere else. If you're winning it one place on the field, you're losing it somewhere else on the field. Find out where they're losing it, and they're losing it on the outside. So for Texas, if they decide, all right, you know, we're going to stop the run, which I doubt this year. Like, why would a team stack the box against Texas? What the hell's the reason to?
Not really.
I think you're going to see teams drop those safeties back against Texas and decide we're taking away that deep ball because we know he's jonesing for that deep ball, baby, which they were better at. All right. We know he's chasing the deep ball. I think they're going to take that away initially and force Sark to kind of beat you with long drives, 15 play drives down the field. And I think if they're going to do that, then you're going to make sure that your running game can also be supplemented with the passing game.
Yeah, because whenever defenses sort of dare you to do that, dare you to be disciplined, and it's because you're an explosive offense.
Exactly.
And they want you to do it 15 times in a row because then there's a chance that you may stub your toe on one and commit a penalty, or you may make one mistake instead of the ability to be explosive. And going back to those teams, you know, we talk about the screen game, and we may see it more through guys like Whittington or seeing somebody like Sanders. In that 07 season, you had JerMichael have 45 receptions for 575. JT is already out. Performed that his freshman year. And then that year, though, when you combine Jamal and Obunaya, it was 38 receptions for 403 yards. The year before, with the running backs, they combined for 49 when you combine Obunaya and Charles and Selvin. So those were years whenever it was a young Colt, but they were facilitating it through a screen game and using the tight ends. So when you add that Texas has this top end at the wide route position, in addition to having pieces like that that you really haven't seen used in the past game since that era, it just gives Texas that full multi-purpose attack, which you really haven't had since, like, maybe back whenever it was when you were on campus, Rod, because you had three top-end receivers. You had Sed Benson, and then you had Scaife when healthy, but also you were trying to fit in other guys. Like, it was a time that you had – you could say the best skill guys in college football, or right there with Miami, or right there with some of the top teams. And this might be the first time Texas can say that.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I'd probably say, you know, again, anytime you're putting Roy Williams into the conversation, for me, that's high praise. But I go back to that 03 team with a healthy Bo Scaife. You had a young David Thomas at tight end. So you had weapons at tight end, and you had the last year of Roy Sloan and BJ. And don't forget, before the Oklahoma game, a Chance Mock went into that game. He was leading the nation in pass efficiency.
That's crazy.
So yeah, and then lost his job to but he lost it to Vince Young. Yeah, so there's no shame.
None to be ashamed of that.
Yeah. And then the offense changed zone read, whatever. But that was the last time you had that kind of group and maximized the talent that group had, or had a chance to maximize the talent that group had.
Yeah.
The offense changed when VY took over, but you still had those guys available.
Which is kind of, I've heard Sark say, I heard him say it on that Pivot podcast, which if you got some time, I mean, it's like an hour or something long, so it's pretty long.
Yeah, but Ryan Clark's good.
Yeah, they're good. No, I like those guys. Fred Taylor
and Channing Crowder?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And they're great. And it's really good, but it's a long one, like it's an hour or something. There's a lot of random fluff in there, but also some nuggets. And one of the great nuggets was when Sark said he looks to remake his offense every year. He literally looks to reinvent his offense every year based on the talent that he has. That's a good sign for the offensive identity this year, because I do think it's going to be drastically different than the offense was last year. It has to be.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. If not, you're going to have Washington. The Alamo Bowl. That's the result. Yeah. And you don't want that. It has to be drastically different.
I think I don't know if I'm taking it a step further per se, but when you talk about that offensive identity, Rod, my goal is for Sark, you've got to go into every game with thinking, all right, I know they're going to come out in a two-high shell because they don't fear my run game. Mm-mm. How quickly can I make them get in a one-high look and put an extra guy closer to the line of scrimmage?
Exactly.
That's got to be the focus.
Because
when you do that, now you've got one-on-one on the outside. And like you said, oh, great. Yeah, now you've got numbers in the box. Well, guess what? One of these receivers that can beat your man coverage is going to be one-on-one.
Totally
it's just
agree.
Up to Quinn to find him.
And the way that they'll do that is with things like the screen game. If you don't have that running game threat, it's going to be passing underneath. Yeah,
because I don't know if they're going to have a traditional dominant running game. Like just be able to hand it off and then let somebody run downhill. Versus some teams, they will just matchup based wise. But I think they're going to have to use innovation and creativity. Whether you be 6-0 line packages, trying to get more bodies on the field.
Don't plan on going into Tuscaloosa and running it 40 times.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that either. Exactly. No. But high percentage passes, to get your quarterback in a groove and in a rhythm, and to, like you said, get Bama in out of the two high and maybe get them in a single high, and then what the coverages are more likely to be, that's ideal. But I'm with you. If I'm going against Texas next year, I got my two high shell. Y'all may score against me, but it's going to take you 15 plays. Mm-hmm. I ain't gonna let you get those chunk yardage plays on me.
And that's the thing with Sark, because Sark had the patience to do that.
Exactly.
Could Quinn have the patience to do that?
Yeah, they always say in poker, right, don't play the hand, play the man. Play your opponent. To hell with the hand that he's got, play the opponent. And if I'm going against Sark, I play Sark, because Sark wants the deep ball. He's going to chase it. Now, in this scrimmage, they did show, in the spring game, I should say, did show a more effective deep ball, and that's great. Hopefully that is the case, and Texas is more effective at completing and converting the deep ball. But if they're not, in every game, they're not going to be great at the completing the deep ball every game, and some games they'll be better than others. But if they don't have the deep ball, Sark changes as a play caller.
Mm-hmm.
He does. He starts to chase the deep ball. I always say, like TLC, don't go chasing waterfalls. He chased waterfalls. Should stick to the rivers and the lakes. That's a short game and the intermediate game. But if he's going to keep chasing that deep ball, then all right, until he gets it, he's going to keep chunking it.
And that's
why I keep my two high shell. But as he chunks it, yes, he's trying to do psychological damage on the defense, and it may plant the seed of fear, back them up a little bit. But if he keeps chasing it, and he's done that a few times, we've all observed it. If he does, he also inflicts damage on the offense. Mm-hmm. He puts them behind the chains. He puts them in second and long and third and long, and that's when you start chasing that waterfall. So for Sark, to me, I'm with you. I think that this year, a lot of it is going to be about his ability as a play caller to adapt and to win the chess match within the game.
Yep, and I like that you brought up the poker mentality, because not only is it playing the man and not the hand, but then you got to think about, within playing the man, playing the probabilities. And if you're like, okay, if I'm playing that man, and that man likes to do the one play that has the lowest percentage, you're going to try to entice him at times to be able to do that, because you know that, especially if you aren't – now, if you're going the tech philosophy and you're buying into four plays instead of three plays – maybe you can waste one here and there and it not magnified. But most people play football. You're playing Alabama. You're playing three down football. You aren't playing four down football. So that just makes throwing a deep ball even more volatile to your success, to where, like, yeah, you might get it paid off a time or two and get that big one. But if we're able to win, or if we're going to take that conservative mentality as a defense and play too high back there and not necessarily entice him and still think he's going to be dared to do that, and you can do it by shading different looks or deceiving your coverage and making it not look as if you're showing it, and then fall back into a shell real late inside, like right at the snap, do things like that, it can make somebody like Texas have an offense that's not nearly as potent. You think it's potent, but it's not really as potent because they're enticing you to do the low probability play instead of taking. That's why Colt McCoy and Shipley were like so amazing. You could move the chains. And that's why we're talking about this screen game and using the tight ends and using this, you know, if you don't have traditional screens, the wide receivers on the outside, guys like Witt, it seems like Jontae Cook has that skill set to make guys miss. We've seen guy like Xavier Worthy be able to be that guy, and especially if he's staying away from contact, just getting what's in front of you and getting out of bounds, taking five here and being happy with it, it really can help your offense become way more explosive overall because you're moving the chains without playing that lowest probability football play.
Yeah, to add to your point, it's a great point. If you do what you're proposing, the deep ball comes more organically and naturally within the offense.
Yes.
Sark forces the deep ball, which I'm not mad at him for forcing it, but he forces it because he claims it's really integral to their entire passing game. I disagree because he throws the deep ball first. I went and did stats. I went and looked at every damn deep ball Texas threw this year. 50% of the deep ball is on first down.
Yeah.
50% of them. So he wants to start off with that. He wants you to start off with that psychological disadvantage of playing scared as a defense. But when he doesn't complete them, which they didn't complete a lot of them last year, then Texas is behind the chains often on those situations. And for a quarterback that was struggling, that can be a true regression. So to your point that you're talking about, that's why the three high works really well against Sark, right? Because it does give you disguise.
Yep.
They don't necessarily know if you do have two deep or one deep. They don't really know. They really can't figure it out. Just a single high and a two high makes it a little bit easier because those pre-snap shell disguises are, you know, as a player, you've seen more reps with that.
But
he hasn't seen as many reps with three high, and that actually does confuse the quarterback about, do I have a single high safety or do I have two deep? Am I throwing the underneath? Am I throwing the deep ball? So to your point, yeah, maybe that's the way to go against Sark. It's a lot of pre-snap shell disguise, but I'm with you. I think it starts with deep ball. He should work. I would, like you say, pitch backwards or whatever. I would, if I'm Sark, I would work in reverse. Like, I would work with the short game, quick game, then the intermediate. And I think the deep ball would naturally come because the defense will also get frustrated
they'll
and lose patience.
In.
And then they'll start to take more chances and to jump those routes. And then the other stuff will open up. So I'm hoping this year, and it happened in the spring game a little bit. The first deep ball actually didn't come until late in the first quarter. Usually his deep balls are in his script. In his first 20 plays. So I'm hoping that he's going to let the flow of the game come to him a little bit rather than trying to force that deep ball.
Yeah, because like that's I always think back to like because the prime Sark offense that first saw was that first Texas OU game. But how did Texas open that? It's a screen to Worthy that he takes to the house.
Exactly.
And then, I mean, when that happens, that then opened up the deep ball for later on in that first half when you started to hit those. But you didn't hit it right out the gate. You hit it because something up front and missing a tackle ended up causing it.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the fact that 08 offense was as productive as it was, like when you lose Blaine Irby early in that year and Jordan Shipley became your de facto tight end, you didn't have Jamal Charles, who you had in 07. Like, it's
O-line was not
– it was not great. A dominant O-line.
It was not a dominant
but
O-line.
But the idea of something
and I
like
Shipley. Some of the dudes that came through that era, like David Snow and some of those other guys, like I like them as people, but there was not a it's not a dominant O-line.
Nope. And that's where something like, you know, the thought of a guy like Shipley – playing what we call that tight end role, you might be afraid of it, but we've seen across sports so many times that don't look at a person's like size or stature as something that should cut you off from being able, like the most effective way to play basketball nowadays is a small ball five. You know, we talk about people like Jose Altuve is an insane power hitter and he has like a great launch angle, but he's so small and diminutive. Oh, yeah. Like moving a guy like Shipley inside, it's like, well, You know, you look at these batteries and the guys, like we talk about how effective, you know, the Brady to Gronk or the, you know, Kelsey to Mahomes ability. But like, well, what does it always help? It helps a quick game, which can make you get away with having a bad offensive line. And then you're on the same page and you have a guy like, if you look at Kelsey's touchdowns last year, it's crazy. But like, he's a guy that he's one of the best receivers against zone. But then when you look at him, how he scored all of his touchdowns, it's like, well, he scored all his touchdowns almost against man. It's like, I think 78% of his touchdowns. It's like, because once you get bunched down into goal line, well, then he can perform and beat his man. But having a guy mentally being able to be on the same page as a quarterback and being able to find those spots, and that's why I keep beating home that this year, Jatavion having that pre-existing relationship like Quinn, if they are forming that type of chemistry, it could be really valuable, especially also a guy like Witt underneath.
We talked about the offensive line a couple of times, and I want to talk about this Texas offensive line because it's too early to say whether this is going to be a dominant offensive line, and I need to see a lot more before I'm even willing to go into that realm. But, man, I like the depth on this team. And, you know, I was thinking about it watching the spring game as a whole. That was my big takeaway, and I'm glad Sark said it while I was thinking it in the postgame. He loves the depth on this team, and it's young. A lot of it's young depth, and it's got a chance. You can see Texas getting on an upward trajectory where the product on September 2nd, it's much different, you know, the product by the end of the year.
Yeah,
just because of the young talent and the growth potential that this team has. And, man, I don't think there's any place more evident than the offensive line. I mean, you think about it. They ended the spring with Cole Hudson, Connor Robertson, and DJ Campbell all on the shelf. And there were springs where in the past that would cripple you. I mean, at that point, you might have five guys that you feel good about. That's when you get into the spring game where, hey, we don't have enough to actually play a game. You know, we just have a, you know, glorified practice or whatever. But, man, they rolled Nato Amaiazulu in there with the ones, and he looked fine. You know, Hayden Connor got to run some center, and like, you didn't see like just this noticeable drop off. You know, I just the rate of development. Rod, I love you. Brought us that term a couple of years ago, and I love using it. So I borrow that from you. Yeah, rip off and duplicate. I wouldn't do that unless you were really good at your job, Rod. So,
appreciate that.
But you know, the fact that the rate of development of these, the 2022 offensive linemen, like we saw what Kelvin Banks did last year, but like,
that's amazing.
You look at Nato, you look at DJ Campbell. I mean, Cole Hudson started every game last year. Now throwing what Cam Williams is doing, like that's, man, the dynamics in that room have changed exponentially since Kyle Flood got here.
No, I agree
with you. I'm excited about the offensive line. I'm usually very pessimistic about that group. I'm excited about where this thing is going.
I mean, the talent level is tremendous.
Let me tell you, I'm more excited about that position group than I am any other position group in this program, including quarterback.
Wow.
Including quarterback.
Wow.
That's how much talent I think is in that room.
It is.
That's good.
And they've barely, you know, in terms of them having an impact right now, I mean, hell, only two of those guys really had like an instant impact already. So they got a ton of talent that they've been stockpiling in that room that they're ready kind of to unleash. So I'm with you. I think the potential is through the roof. I will say, you know, last year, Texas blocking, run blocking, actually as a run blocking O-line, actually wasn't that great. It's just you had two elite prospects at breaking tackles in the backfield with Bijan and Rojo. And in pass protection, they weren't terrible in pass protection, but also not elite. So I would like to see this year them become elite, either pass pro or at run blocking. Because they have that, they got experience coming back, ton of experience coming back, but they also, the guys who are now on the depth chart, if you will, in second string, a lot of them have higher ceilings than even some of the starters.
I agree.
Who are veteran players. So this year, in terms of your rotation of 7-8 guys, I expect that to be a really good rotation. And I expect it to be a strength. At one point, I'm with you. If the O-line is playing at a high level, it really doesn't matter about the offensive identity anymore. Like, the offensive identity, to me, it takes over because we're not sure if they're going to have a dominant O-line that can impose their will and have their way with an opponent and give you a totally balanced offense running and passing. My assumption is they'll be better at one than the other, like most O-lines mm-hmm. are, and then you'll build the offensive identity around that. My assumption right now is they'll probably be better at pass blocking and run blocking. People say that's crazy because young O-linemen are really better at run blocking and pass blocking. That is true, but I think losing Bijan and Rojo is going to be it's going to have a bigger impact in a negative impact, I guess, on the running game than people suspect. I said it before the bowl game last year. I guess Sark didn't understand it because Sark didn't even add any creativity or innovation to the running game. He assumed Bijan and Rojo run plays will work even without Bijan and Rojo, and he was wrong. All right. Yeah. And I think if you go into this season with that same attitude, you're going to be wrong again.
Yeah.
So that run game, I do think needs to be overhauled just a little bit and tweaked just a little bit to build it around what run plays you run really well and run plays that Jay Brooks runs well and that, you know, Jaden Blue runs well and Keenan Robinson. Figure out those three or four plays that each of those guys is really good at and then stack plays on top of those, because I don't think you got a Bijan and a Rojo where, you know what, anything in the any play in our playbook that's associated with the run game, those guys can do it, and they can do it as well, if not better than anybody else.
Yeah.
You don't have that.
I was thinking about this in relation to Hayden Connor working at center, which I'm glad we got to see that in the spring game. Mm-hmm. And that's a move I'm really intrigued by because, you know, if Hayden Connor can push Jake Majors to the point where you can get him some in-game snaps at center, like rotate him in, that gives you a path to getting DJ Campbell and Nedo Omeyazulu and Cam Williams, like some combination of those three reps. You only got two starting guard spots.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, this is
first world problems, baby.
This is a situation Texas has not been in such a long time.
And it's hard to do. I mean, keep that stockpile offensive line like that.
Yeah, and if I'm those young guys don't have a reason to hit the portal because some of these veterans are going to be gone after this season. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you'd be in the two deep to start spring ball next year.
Yeah, they got a 6-0 line package, so they'll throw you out there too in the 6-0 line package of young bucks.
But in relation to Hayden Connor at center, it cracks me up because, hey, Rod, your playing experience led us down this road. Like spring ball, we've been saying for a decade on this podcast, spring ball is a time where you can experiment. You get to do a position change, try something new, spring ball is a time to do it. And then Sark says it, and people around here act like this is some big revelation. Oh, yeah, I guess you could experiment during the spring. Like, yeah, dummy, that's what spring ball is for.
It's the only time
it's always been for.
Yeah, it's the only time you have the valuable, like, you're allowed to.
Yeah. Like, and I'm not knocking Sark. I'm knocking the people that think Sark just unveiled some just so outside-the-box concept of, spring is where you experiment. Like, no, Sark knows what everybody knows. This is when you do it.
Yeah, Mac Brown was experimenting, too. I mean, that's when we would talk about, who did we talk about for, was it
O.J. McClintock, the walking experiment.
Yeah.
The living, breathing experiment.
All over the place. But who was the DB? Was it Duke Thomas? Who's the DB that played?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, that stuff happens in the spring. You experiment with
maybe
guys
it's
all the time.
PTSD post Herman because Herman was so rigid into what he was doing.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good
Texas
point.
Fans just aren't used to seeing it now. But
and if that's the Savion Red thing, that was great because, I mean, they turned out they really liked Savion Red, and I liked what I saw from Savion Red too in that game. And so I think the running backs, it's still a work in progress from what I saw. When Jonathan Brooks comes back, I imagine it will look different. They don't seem to have the force, like a power run game just yet. Maybe Jonathan Brooks is that power run game.
Jay Brooks is probably that
he can bring, right? He can thump a little bit. So I think they're going to have a little trouble early on, maybe in the power run game, the interior run game. But I think ultimately they'll be fine just because I think he'll be a running back by committee. I did see something that I really liked early on too, and it didn't work out. But I've talked about if you're going to have this, you know, you're going to revamp this passing game, and that was his big priority in offseason. You might want to build the passing game actually around featuring JT Sanders early on rather than X-Man. And X-Man's still going to get the same amount of targets, of course. He gets his targets. He's the game-breaking presence in your passing game. Mm-hmm. But in terms of where the remember, a lot of the passing game last year would start with X-Man.
Mm-hmm.
It would start. Like, you knew in the script it was like X-Man, 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 X-Man. They were force-feeding the football to X-Man. And that's fine, but it's easier to double and neutralize X-Man. You can put your best corner on him if he's outside. If they put him inside, you also can double him in the slot. There's just fewer ways for you to hide him on the chessboard. JT Sanders can move around twice as many places as him, and he'll be going up against much less equipped defenders to defend him. right, to cover him, because he'll be going against linebackers and safeties most of the time. Maybe they'll put a nickel back on him, but if they put a nickel back on him instead of Jay Witt, then you're golden. You know what I mean? So for me, that's where they started in the spring game.
Yeah,
I mean, two of the first three plays were JT Sanders, and he didn't catch him, and one he dropped. But I like that early on, it looked like they were trying to feature JT Sanders early on. I think out of the first three plays, they all were passing plays, which is good, because I think the passing game is going to be the identity of the offense. But then only one of them was X-Man, and two of them were JT Sanders. I thought to myself, this is exactly what you need to be doing early on. X-Man is still going to get his, but JT is a much better candidate to help your quarterback get in the rhythm and in the groove rather than chunking it downfield to X-Man.
Yeah. Yep, and also to add to that, another good reason is sustainability. You know, one body type is a lot smaller and a lot more prone to injuries than, say, a guy like Jatavion Sanders. So the volume, you know, you don't necessarily see guys like X-Man being volume. Like Antonio Brown may be the one outlier. He's a guy that was really small and a high volume receiver. Almost no other receivers are like that.
Devontae Smith turned into that at Bama because of all the injuries.
And they didn't want him to be that. And he's a freak, But and if he's also really good at avoiding contact. And that was something, a subtle note, but something I sort of noticed. A guy like X-Man in the spring game, you know, running out of bounds, running away from people doing those type of things. And that's something that you could just little tiny tweaks like that really could help your sustainability over time.
I think in the run game, Rod, when we talk about creativity and different things you could do, I think split flow is still going to continue to be a really big part of this run game because it has been. But with the weapon that JT is, and I don't think it was the Jaden Blue touchdown, but it was one of his runs where I noticed it looked like a split. It was a split zone look. But then he like cut it back to the tight end, the side the tight end was flowing to. So I'm like, okay, this just tells you like they love the split zone. Now if you can add some bells and whistles off of that, that's one thing you could do. Because if I'm a linebacker or whoever, safety, whoever the key on JT Sanders is, I have to go where he goes.
You better.
Yeah.
You get that dude.
Because the minute you don't, that's going to be a hard play action fake and a boot, and he'll be wide open in the flat with nothing but 20 yards of turf in front of him.
Yeah, the whole momentum of the offense is going to be riding with him. So if you can use that concept to go against the grain and be a lot more space back there. And when you look at both of these backs, both of them last year, more than exactly two-thirds zone to gap scheme for Jaden Blue, and it was like 21-9 for a guy like Brooks. But back Brooks the year before was only 11-10, so last year was much more zone. But also, it would lend he'd be maybe more of just your gap guy if you need to have that.
Yeah, it makes sense. Another thing I think we're gonna see more of, just kind of clues from the spring game. I thought I noticed more RPOs. Just in general. And we've talked about how hard it is to track, classify RPOs. Mm-hmm. You really got to have kind of that coach's view.
Between that and play
action. 22. Yeah, exactly. And because people always say, oh, that was an RPO. They always talk about the pass. Like, some of the runs are RPOs, too. He just handed it off.
And all RPOs.
It announces the broadcast. It never say, hey, that was an RPO handoff. They always go, that was an RPO. You noticed that he did. He pulled it. I was like, well, sometimes sarcasm, what he calls a fake RPO, which is basically kind of a play action pass, but it's meant to look like an RPO. Yeah,
there you go.
And sometimes with him, it's a fake RPO. So you really never know. He's actually trying to fake out the defender that's in conflict and kind of keep them mentally, keep their wheel spinning. So it's hard to do that. But I thought just eye test alone, because like I said, I'm not going to give you a number because it's hard to throw it out there. But I think I saw more RPO. I bet the RPO rate's going to go up. RPO is basically it's a combination of the quick game and the run game, and it's a perfect way to get a Quinn Ewers or a young quarterback in a rhythm. And the reason I think it's really good for Quinn and why you didn't see enough of it, I don't know, last year or even with Casey Thompson and Hudson Card the year before, I don't think he trusted his young quarterbacks dealing with the mesh point manipulation of it, right? The sleight of hand and all
decision.
That. I don't think he trusted how it based, for them to be in rhythm with the throws.
And with the old line the way it was.
Yeah, I think this year, I think he's a little bit more trusting of those guys in his system. They're more comfortable in the system, familiarity, and I think they've been practicing, right, repping it. You're going to see more RPO. So remember, at Bama, they led the country in RPO rate. At Bama, he wants to be an RPO-based passing game. He talks about that all the time, and I think he had to dial that back the last couple of years. He just wasn't comfortable calling that much RPO with his quarterbacks. I think he thought, you know, that they basically you would open them up to more margin for error.
And turnover risk. Turnover risk is insanely huge, and that's where offensive line aspect, like Jeff brought up, if this is the best group that you have around, you have the confidence, because not only does offensive line, like everybody knows, it makes you better, but it makes everybody better in so many different ways. It amplifies your best players because they get to be used how intended, but it also can enhance the play calling ability and the the confidence in certain things that, like, we're talking about RPOs, with certain plays like that and play action that are used that are so much more effective to the defense. But if you're sort of boxing yourself out from even using that because of your fear of risk of turnovers or of the manipulation of the mesh point, not only with the young quarterback, but then
timing when you add it all,
there's so
page.
Many things that are tied together that all stem from the offensive line being able to give you that first 3 seconds. And we've seen Quinn have a really good time to throw.
Illegal man downfield.
I even brought up the number last week, and the more I thought about it, it makes more sense. But how it's crazy that whenever he's clean, he has all 16 drops this year by receivers were clean. When under pressure, zero drops. But that's I think that's all because Quinn, when under pressure, like most quarterbacks, you aren't accurate. So you aren't even throwing the ball in the area to be dropped. So it shows how much more room, even though he was like right at 100 quarterback rating, if you're using the NFL rating system, not the really amplified college system, that's with 16 drops on his all clean throws. So, like, if you're talking about the receivers catching those balls too, how much better he could have been in numbers wise last year when we saw there's so much more room for improvement, that if he is getting that time to be kept clean this year, could be really good.
We're not going to have time to get into the defense, so let's just go ahead and finish up talking about the quarterbacks. And here's what I don't, and it's going to happen in every fan base, especially a fan base like Texas, where, you know, more often than not, the number two quarterback's the most popular guy on campus. Rod, you live that during your playing days.
Oh, yeah.
So is the number three guy the most popular one?
Well, in this case, he might be. Don't get caught up in is Malik pushing Quinn, and should Quinn be pushed by Malik, and where is Arch in this? Don't let that cause you to lose sight of the fact that Texas has three quarterbacks that they should feel really good about and that I like where all three of them are in their stages of development. Like, was Quinn as polished on Saturday as he needs to be on September 2nd? No. But does everything look better than it did at the end of last season? To me, 100%.
Damn right.
Is Malik ready to step in and be a starter? Probably not. But is he much further along than I think everybody thought he would be at this point? 100%. Is Arch anywhere where anybody wants him to be right now? No, during his first semester of college football.
When he should be in high
school. But do you expect him to be in it? Does he look like he could be in a much different place by the time you get to August? Absolutely. So you've got a really good problem right now in that quarterback room. That's what your offense is. It's a position-by-position analysis of really good problems, and your really good problem at quarterback is, man, you really do have three that you feel good about where they're going.
Yeah, you went from third-world problems at quarterback a few years ago. Now you got first-world problems at quarterback. You have legit NFL arms, all right, and all throughout the depth chart, the quarterback position. And, yeah, Malik Murphy might have the strongest. I mean, he's got an absolute cannon. And heard today from man Quan Cosby that VY has taken a liking to Malik Murphy. They talk. They talk weekly.
That's good.
Yeah, about, you know, keeping your goals intact. And even though, yeah, you might be down the depth chart, talked about how he tells him his time about, you know, being behind Chance Mock and not losing faith and keeping that confidence, all that kind of stuff. But I thought Malik Murphy actually kind of won the day in the spring game because this is a guy that hadn't been able to see the field pretty much because he had been dealing with injury. That's his own journey that he's dealing with. But talking about the team, hey, man, you can't make the club in a tub. We didn't even talk a lot about Malik Murphy because what's the point in talking about him? If
exactly.
He's not
that's kind of where I
field?
Got, yeah.
Yeah, so we haven't talked a ton about him on this show, and it's not out of disrespect. I've heard the man has got, you know, a ton of potential, and that was pretty obvious out there. So I thought of all the players that were out there in the spring, Malik Murphy actually did win the spring game because there was talk, especially, you know, with Arch Manning coming in, that not only, and even I have thought Arch Manning would compete for the backup spot, and some nationally, which is ridiculous. They was going to compete for the starting spot. We know that's not happening. We on this show, we know how often Texas had to use a backup quarterback in the last 25 years. I think there's been like, what, 5 years in the last 26 years or something where they haven't had to go to a backup quarterback for some reason or another. So one of the biggest issues, arguably the most important issue going into this spring game was not just if Quinn Ewers had taken his game to the next level, was could you find out who your backup was and could you actually show that there wouldn't be a precipitous, monumental drop-off after Quinn Ewers, if something happened to Quinn or you had to take Quinn out. And I think a lot of Longhorn fans would, if something happened, would be intrigued.
Yeah.
Now by the prospect of Malik Murphy going in there with all these weapons. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is one of the biggest storylines coming out of the spring game, is that I think you got your second-string quarterback. I think you got your number two. I think he basically said Quinn's the starter, but I think you also got your number two.
It's the best-case scenario, because now, assuming those guys stay on their rate of development, again, going back to that term, Quinn should be ready to rock and roll by the time you get to September 2nd. Malik Murphy should be unquestionably your backup. Now you're dealing with the best case scenario of, okay, Arch doesn't have to worry about playing.
Charles Wright, baby.
He can register.
And then you got your four games.
Charles Wright for the third string.
And then nowadays you even have four games, so it doesn't even matter. Say one does have an injury, you have the ability to not even burn a red shirt the way that the modern rules are. And, like, to think of how young this QB room is, like, right now, Arch, in theory, like, if it was 20 years ago, would still be his senior year of high school. And if you look at where Quinn was, well, I mean, if you look at his career arc, that's when he was at Ohio State, meaning that, like, this upcoming fall ended up being where, like, if Arch was the starter this fall, that's how young Quinn was last year. When you look at just their natural years being 4 years of high school and then your first year of college. So we have two guys, like, right now that are, like, if you look in traditional age, what would be a true sophomore and a true freshman coming in this year, and you have that ability to have Arch redshirt, which is just so big, and having a full half semester, a full half year, a full semester of experience in college by enrolling early, and then Quinn having his whole senior year, a full year of enrolling early. They're really young for the scale of what college football is.
Yeah, and I wouldn't guarantee that they'd all stay here.
No, exactly. That's why you can leave,
because the
Quinn's
transfer
eligible
portal we
after
have,
this year.
But I think part of the new era, transfer portal era, and I was talking about this on my show, because we were talking about the guys who have hit the transfer portal. I think the latest was Jaden Alexis, the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you got with four guys or something like that that hit the transfer portal for Texas. And, you know, it's one of those things where you should, as a university, you should, but not as a person, thank this comparison. But people stalk their exes, cyber stalk their exes on social media all the time. I think it's like an 80% rate that people actually look up what their exes are doing online. And that's just, I'm not judging people for that. All right. I've probably been guilty of it too. But my point is, it's fun to do that with your, with the transfer portal and the players who have gone on elsewhere, because I think it does show you how healthy your roster turnover really is. If you have guys that are leaving your program and that are coveted by other programs,
FBS,
and they're going to Power Five schools and Group of Five schools, it does show you that there's a lot of healthy turnover, because it's happening. Attrition happens to everybody now, but you have healthy attrition if your players are indeed being coveted and being picked up by Group of Five schools or Power Five schools. So you got a good picker, just like the reason you should be cyber-stalking your exes is so you can find out how they're doing, and you should hope they're doing really, really well, because if they are doing really well, it shows you that you pick well, that you actually know how to choose them. And even when they're not with you, they're still doing well. And I think it shows it's a healthy sign of your growth in your life, but also healthy sign of turnover and attrition on your team when that's happening.
Yeah, instead of having ones going down to like that other level, going to the Sam's or going to Lamar or places like that.
And last year, I want to say 80 to 85% of Texas players ended up with Group of Five or Power Five universities.
Yeah, and it even shows you where the talent, because we knew there wasn't a talent drop-off, but when we would see guys, like, say, 8 or 9 years ago or 5 or 6 years ago transferring out and then, like, making it in the league, and you're like, wait.
That is,
And
I
it's
totally
showing
agree.
You, like, wait, we weren't developing these guys because they're really turning into something, but they weren't here.
Derek Roberson's one of those guys for me. Like, we knew he was talented. He goes to Sam Houston State, and I don't know if he's still with the Titans or not, but I know he played a couple of years, got him a couple of years in the league.
Yeah, that always shocked me. You see the guy, he's like, hey! It's like that Leonardo DiCaprio meme.
Adrian Colbert, same thing.
Yeah.
It's a different sport. I brought this up to Jeff.
Didn't I see Montrell Meander?
Montrell Meander.
Like with the Browns.
Hung in the league for a little
bit.
He's
on the Browns.
Playing like defense. I was like, whoa. But yeah, those
Desmond Harris and Sasquatch made it to the league.
Exactly.
It's a different sport, but tonight for the Atlanta Hawks is Donovan Williams. I bet nobody ever thought Texas basketball Donovan Williams from 2021 would be in the NBA.
It's a good point.
Yeah, I'll raise my hand and say I didn't see that. But, Rod, if you go back to the fall period, if you include Jalen Garth, which now, because U of H is a Power 5 school now, I've got 9 of 15 outgoing transfers that went to Power 5 schools.
From last cycle?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's what I'm saying. That's
and like
really
the ones
good.
That did in Logan Parr's at SMU, JD Coffey's at San Diego State, and who was the other one? DJ Harris is at South Florida.
Like I said, that's everybody's got attrition these days. You cannot avoid it. It's a transfer portal era. All you can hope for is that. You can hope for that. That as a fan, that's how you know it's healthy attrition for your team. You're upgrading talent. You're not just losing guys because of bad culture or lose. Guys don't see a path to play. Now you see why Brandon Thompson decides to leave. He's like, dude, I can't play.
A.D.
Like,
Mitchell's there.
Receivers. You saw him out there? That's why he can't play.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at Keontae Ingram. He was getting snaps right there, but it was Rojo and Bijan all getting over 200 snaps. He's like, yeah, I'll go to USC.
Yeah, those back-to-back fumbles, back-to-back weeks.
Yeah.
In the TCU game.
With the LSU drop.
Was it TCU in Oklahoma?
Well, the fans turned on him after the drop touchdown
reception.
Did he
start one in the Oklahoma game? He started off with like a fumble or something?
Well, it was LSU touchdown drop in the end zone.
Matt, or I was talking about 20.
Okay.
I think he might be right.
When, like, it was like back-to-back weeks. That's how we were talking about he's really hard on himself.
Yeah.
And we're like, man, you got to let that go. You make a mistake, you let it go, you keep moving.
Yeah.
It was something like that. I forget. I may have screwed it up somehow. But I thought it was like randomly, like back-to-back weeks, he had a crucial mistake, and I think he was in his own head.
And in big games, it was just a few of those things.
Oh, LSU, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. But getting back to your point, path to play.
Yeah.
And those guys are going to USC.
Yeah, going to
big
schools.
You're right, Ron. Second play from scrimmage for Texas in the OU game in 2020.
Oh, it was brutal. I felt so bad for him because I know he was thinking about the week before.
Yeah.
We had made a mistake, and it was like, oh, let it go, man. But that's an NFL guy.
Yeah.
So I'm with you anyway.
Just to finish up on the quarterbacks and kind of wrap this up, and we'll talk defense and draft next week.
Yeah, I got a lot of defense.
I promise we'll get to the defense.
Yeah.
Quinn had the kind of spring game that, honestly, I was kind of hoping he'd have. You can look at the good plays and take that away, but in terms of the mistakes he made, there weren't any of those what the hell was that plays. Which, hey, in my defense saying that, we down the stretch of the regular season, we saw a lot of those from Quinn. And the fact that he's not making them, even in a controlled environment, that to me is progress.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. Yeah, because I remember those plays. I don't even bring up exactly what plays are, but we all remember those, like what the WTF plays for him. And even Sark, a couple of times Sark decided to just abandon the passing game and abandon Quinn altogether.
The Baylor game and the Iowa State game. Yeah.
Bijan and Rojo, let's go with it. And God bless him for that, because they end up getting more wins than they probably should have because of the regression at quarterback. But getting back to your point, I totally agree. But the one, if I'm going to be nitpicky here, because I thought he had a good spring game, I want better ball placement. I think his ball placement is a little off sometimes.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Just on on more routine throws. I just think because what Sark wants is he wants his receivers to be yak daddies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yards after the catch. Exactly. And his break to daylight philosophy. Yak yards are all about ball placement. Yep. You put the ball in the right place, and receiver can get it, and he has very little time to flip his hips. You put it in the right place, depending on where the receiver is and their leverage. You can really help him out to get those yak yards. So that's what I want to see from Quinn. And I see him trying to have a perfect rep, but he's capable of that
for sure.
If he wasn't capable of him delivering a perfect ball with perfect placement, I wouldn't even be calling for this. But I think he can do it.
And that's where a play that's like a 10-yard game can become a touchdown because you. Instead of having to get your balance back and fall over, and that's enough time to have the defender catch up and tackle you, you can make that first move in stride and make a guy miss.
They're not exactly the same guy, but to me, Rod, Quinn with ball placement is where your boy Chris Sims was with velocity. Like, hey, not every throw has to be a fastball.
Yeah, that's where Garrett Gilbert was, too.
He loved that. And that's a good point, because I remember Malik, he throws the, I think it's kind of a curl route, a deep curl, and when he shows off the arm, I think it's like one of his second or third throws, something like that, and everybody goes, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are times, like you said, hey, show it off. This is it. Mm-hmm. Show it off. Let everybody know. But then there are times where, just touch is required. Just a little touch.
And there was a few times last year when you saw that happen, because Quinn does
have touch.
There were times, beautiful touch, but I'm saying where he maybe fired one where the receiver, it gets on you quick. Like if you're a guy like JT in traffic, and I think a lot of the times his drops are like when a ball's put, maybe not as much touch, but your quarterback, you're trying to get it out. If you're under pressure, it's how pressure can affect so many different things, and you have a laser arm, you're just trying to get it to him. Over time, you accumulate the game knowledge, and you're able to add that touch.
They do have like three or four drops in the game.
Yeah.
Huh? Had a few drops, like three drops in the game. I thought.
Yeah, the bad one was the DeAndre Moore.
DeAndre Moore,
yeah.
He made up for a deep one. He looked good, too, by the way.
Speaking of touch and ball placement, I'll paraphrase Tenacious D. Jack Black said it one time. It's like intimacy. You know, you don't always have to do it hard. In fact, sometimes that's not right to do.
That's good. I like that. I might have to steal that one. That's pretty good. Well done.
There's a couple four-letter bombs in there that I took out for obvious reasons. But
I like it.
I think it's a good place to stop,
radio
boys.
Edit.
Just pause, nice pause, and we'll pick it back up next week. We're talking draft and defense next week. Rod B., you got your defensive notes ready to go?
Yeah, man. I'm talking field-side corner, talking about Anthony Hill as a natural pass rusher, talking about that D tackles. And we got a transfer portal. Speaking of, D lineman.
Oh, yeah.
Trill Carter.
Got to talk about Trill, man.
We will talk about Trill. Mm-hmm. We'll do all that
That's
next week.
That's an awesome name.
It is. Well, it's not his real name. I think now you can like tell reporters your nickname, and they will respect that.
Well,
like,
I remember the first time you heard name? Little Jordan, and you were like, "That can't be real." It's like, no way, that's what it
says.
That's
on his birth certificate.
Because his name's not true. I think that's like his nickname.
D'Angelo.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he told people true, and they respected it. So I was that's pretty cool. I guess in the NIL world, you got to respect.
Good brand, bro.
There you go.
Matt, thanks for everything, man.
You're more than welcome.
Rod B., appreciate the time and the knowledge.
Anytime, brother, anytime.
For Matt, for Rod, for everybody at the Austin Radio Network and the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com, where you can get Rod B. on Ball Don't Lie each and every weekday from 3 to 7.
Shameless plug.
You can also get myself and Craig Way on Light the Tower from 10 to noon. And thanks to Matt, get all of our archives, our classic interviews and shows are on the Longhorn Blitz SoundCloud page.
Yep, just type in Longhorn Blitz.
Hello, everyone. It's Micah Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Search Horns 24/7 anywhere you get your podcasts. That's Horns 247, no dashes, slashes, or spaces. Click that follow button to get every episode of The Blitz whenever it drops. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
For the Horn family, for the Horns 24/7 family, I'm Jeff Howe. Thank you so much for downloading and listening, and we will catch you again on the next episode.
You've been listening to Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com. Remember, for the latest Longhorn news 24/7, visit Horns247.com.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.